Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What Culture Gaming. I'm Scott, joined by Josh.
Hello, Scott.
Josh, my friend, a long-standing question surrounding Xbox was always just how much money does Game Pass make, and does it feel like a viable future for the industry? And Microsoft have now clarified some stuff while talking to a Brazilian government board.
Absolutely. Like you said, you know, they've been hush-hush about these numbers for years, leading a lot of people like us wondering whether Game Pass is actually successful, whether it makes a profit, or is it a kind of long-term plan for the company to just get people onto their systems and hopefully make it work in a few years' time. But, like you said, according to this recent report from the Brazilian regulators who have been going over the potential Activision Blizzard deal, because there's been a lot of pushback for that, and Microsoft has needed to get the okay from a bunch of different countries, Brazil did pass it, but in the process, revealed a bunch of numbers about just how much Microsoft makes in revenue from a bunch of Xbox services, and we now know for certain that in 2021, Game Pass brought in $2.9 billion, which, for reference, Xbox hardware in the same year brought in $3.7 billion. So it's not that far off, like, the actual sales of, you know, Xbox machines. So that indicates it's doing pretty well. If you wanted to know, overall, the Xbox division made $16 billion. So that's, you can factor all of that stuff in there.
I think someone worked out it was about 18% of their overall revenue.
I think that was in the Tweaktown report. Yes. They broke it down.
Which, you know, that's the whole thing. Like, if it's already making up almost a fifth of their overall gross revenue, whatever, then that's an interesting talking point as to where we go going forward, because it feels like they've made a lot of bets on Game Pass. It feels like it was too good to be true, and the amount of games that you get every month, you know, we long say on the podcast, on here, etc., Game Pass is the best deal in gaming, and hopefully it can maintain. Now, it makes me interested in terms of where that money is going, because they did some limited offers where they got Rockstar to agree to GTA 5 and Red Dead Redemption 2, made an appearance on Game Pass, but only for a couple of months, but I wonder how much money that was, for example.
Well, I'm pleased you
might have already
gone there. I'm pleased you bloody ass, Scott Tilford, because in March 2022, GameSpot wrote up that in a blog post, Microsoft's Chris Chala explained that since 2017, when Game Pass launched, the company has apparently spent hundreds of millions of dollars on these Game Pass games in order to secure them. However, that is obviously a whole load of money, but at the same time, if you're making, you know, $2.9 billion in a year, and that is only going to grow as, you know, the subscribers trend upwards, which they are at the moment for Game Pass, you know, $100 million over a five-year period right now, combined with, compared to a near $3 billion intake in 1 year, there's a lot of profit being made there, is what
I'd
I'm saying.
I'd say what's interesting as well, you know, a lot of people, including us, everyone compares the likes of Sony's first-party stuff, especially this generation, or what they came into their own across the 8th gen, with Xbox's first-party stuff, and that assumption that only Sony can do the likes of, you know, the Horizon series, Ghost of Tsushima, God of War, these big, opulent, over-the-top Last of Us 2, you know, cinema-sized AAA games. The budgets for them average about $50 million. Like, you know, Ghost of Tsushima, the Horizon, etc., they go between $40 and $60 million. So average at about $50 million. That's almost a drop in the ocean compared to the billions that Microsoft can bring in.
Yes.
Obviously, and I've been a big critic of Xbox over the years, because I want to see more from them. I grew up as an Xbox kid. I had a 360. I was there on the blades, on the dashboard. I just want to see them do well. Allocate that money better. But my point is that they have the money to allocate to those projects. We know that they have things in the works, like Avowed or whatever, but they have more than enough money to put into their first party. Whether they do manage to do that and they just keep spending it on exclusives for Game Pass, Pass is the whole thing going forward.
Absolutely, and you know, just for kind of reference, you know, when Google Stadia shut down last week and the reports and the postmortems were coming out about that entire debacle, you know, it was revealed that Google Stadia was paying like $10 million to Rockstar to get Red Dead Redemption 2 and stuff secured for that platform. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it might not be the exact same deal for Microsoft, but that's the kind of money we're talking about to secure these top-tier games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Microsoft has obviously been buying up a bunch of studios over the past 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. Like I said, this whole thing comes from the fact that they're wanting to buy Activision Blizzard. Mm-hmm. However, you know, buying a company and making a regular kind of turnout of content from that company takes a lot of time. So there's a lot of games in development right now, and I wonder whether this is just a great way to kind of like plug that gap, to throw $10 million at Red Dead Redemption 2 for like, you know, a couple of months and have people come buy Game Pass and still make a lot of money that way until we get the big hitters, which will hopefully and possibly bolster Game Pass even more. You know, you imagine that once stuff like Perfect Dark, you know, Gears 6 starts dropping on this service and more regularly we get these first party releases on that service, like this $3 billion in revenue is only going to, you know, maybe even double over the next few years if they do get their eggs in their basket.
That's kind of the fascinating thing of where we're at right now, because like we mentioned at the beginning, there's this whole back and forth between Sony and Microsoft as to whether the deal can go through, with Sony saying if the deal does go through, then Microsoft slash Xbox would have too much of a monopoly on the industry itself and they can't possibly let it go through. Microsoft slash Xbox have said this stuff because they're like, look, it only takes up 20% of our overall profits, etc. Don't worry about it. It's only 18% of the overall thing, and just let it go through. However, the future that they're planning for, which is immaculate business on Phil Spencer's part in the long term, is that they would assumedly only see this number rise, and the likes of the Fallout, Doom, Elder Scrolls, Dishonored, Wolfenstein,
Starfield,
all the stuff, Starfield, which I always forget, all the stuff that they bought would lead to potentially a monopoly on the industry going forward, or a much bigger portion of that pie.
Yeah.
And that's what they're planning for. But it doesn't really hurt them, quote unquote, to show how profitable Game Pass is right now, because it is a hell of a talking point.
Yeah.
It's sort of like it is a considerable part of their revenue, but it's not their entire business model, which is what a lot of people thought it was.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And that's kind of like the part of the revenue, like you were mentioning there, that they could theoretically grow with these acquisitions. Mm. Because, you know, if you're going forward and you're buying the people who made Call of Duty, but you don't intend to make Call of Duty exclusive to your machine, you can still put it on Game Pass day one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can still make people have the option of either paying $70 for it to get it on PS5, or to buy it at Game Pass and have Call of Duty, you know, Black Ops 5 or 6 or whatever we're on now, day one on Game Pass. Like, I think that's the way that they're going to get around this kind of whole monopoly business by not necessarily making things exclusive in the short term, or at least things that, you know, regulators will kick up a fuss about, like Call of Duty, but still use them to bolster Game Pass and make that more appealing.
I still, obviously, I've said many times, but I'll say it again, there'll be a Game Pass app on Switch, on PlayStation. That's how they do it. I feel that the wording was in, the way Phil Spencer talked about the Elder Scrolls acquisition, and said that going forward, all Bethesda games will be made available on places where Game Pass exists. That's the key thing. Whether or not he wants to go back on that going forward, I just feel like they do all these acquisitions, they make all this money, and then they go to the competition. If you want this game, you've got to put your Game Pass streaming service, you've got to put the app on there, and we'll let you stream it through there. I feel like that's their future.
Scott Telfer, you talk a lot about 4D chess on this channel, and I do think that, you know, Phil Spencer is playing a long game of 4D chess, not only with the competitors, but also with the regulators at this point. I kind of feel like we're Charlie from It's Always Sunny with the big conspiracy board saying it's Game Pass will be on PlayStation one day.
From the Mario movie.
Of course he is.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
I'm not been keeping up with this stuff. He's the Mario guy. What was I saying? Like it's a long play, and to be honest, the point is gone now because all I'm thinking about is Luigi's ass. So you can take over.
So let's talk about the overall, you know, the uptick of the amount of people giving into Game Pass. There's a lot of different crossover branding deals where maybe you only pay like a dollar and you get a month of Game Pass, or you buy you know, X other, you know, product or whatever, and you get some part of Game Pass. There is a little bit more information in terms of the user numbers.
Yes, earlier this year it was Business Insider who wrote up that Microsoft had hit 25 million subscribers for Xbox Game Pass, and they kind of suggested or estimated that that would bring in about $250 million a month in revenue, which of course has kind of been supported now that we know the actual figure. That is about right. But what's fascinating to me, at least, is that was in what was my opinion a kind of down period. We had Halo Infinite last year, we had Forza Horizon 5, and those were big games, but since those games, going into 2022, we haven't had much in the way of AAA releases. Like, there's been a lot of indie titles that I've gravitated towards Game Pass for, like As Dusk Falls, I think it's called. The title of that?
Immortality
and Scorn, which is coming up in, like, at the end
of
this
week,
a couple of days. But we haven't had those big AAA hitters, so you imagine this $25 million number from the start of the year is only going to increase, like I said, once the AAAs start getting into the release calendar, and once we get into especially Starfield next year.
I think it's an interesting, like, as like a sort of send-off thing, where we're at right now, PlayStation are all in on franchise building and IP building. You know, it's like the Horizon TV show, the VR experience with the Last of Us TV show, and there's the Ghost of Tsushima movie coming up. Like, they are sort of almost taking a Nintendo approach in terms of their IP, and then bolstering it with the PlayStation Studios stuff. They are not putting that much impetus on the PlayStation, the monthly stuff. Like, there is a PlayStation Plus Game Pass equivalent, quote-unquote, but for me, it's nowhere near the value that you're getting with Game Pass. Well, in terms of the first-party stuff you get on the middle tier, it is. But in terms of how they talk about it and the amount that they're going out their way to put together a monthly selection of titles, I feel like they're way behind Xbox. I feel like they're sort of leaning on past successes instead.
That's it, right? But obviously, now that we've had PlayStation Now merge with the regular PlayStation Plus, and a lot of people have the choice whether they want to get one of these three tiers for the Game Pass equivalent that they have, you know, the PlayStation Plus premium service or the PlayStation Plus Extra or whatever, you know, they already had a massive install base, so I wonder how many of those people, you know, migrated along, maybe bought into the higher tier, and I wonder whether their foothold in the kind of service market already with the original version of PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now translates over to direct competition with Microsoft, because they might not even need to put in that effort. We don't know the Sony numbers right now, but they might already have such a foothold that they might even be on top just because of, like, Microsoft is saying in these regulating meetings, they already have such a dominance over the market anyway. Do they even need to, you know, put in the effort to compete with Game Pass game for game if they're already quote-unquote winning?
That was the hilarious part of one of the quotes from Microsoft / Xbox was just, like, they literally said PlayStation and Nintendo will remain the market, the dominant parts of the market. And then after that, it was like, well, they're quite happy just being number three, ostensibly. We'll sort of just sneak in with our massive billions of dollars on the outside. We'll not worry about this other stuff.
Which we'll make a mere $3 billion a year off one service.
On the side, maybe, if we're feeling lucky. But yeah, I feel like they're sort of reading the terrain of where each company is at. Nintendo is off on their own, you know, just doing backflips, making a Mario movie, who cares? And then you've got, like I said, the PlayStation approach, which is very franchise heavy. They've got the PlayStation Stars program rolling out.
Oh, yes.
Which has kind of, I say rolled out, it's sort of flumped. And we've sort of tried to pick it back up and go, what's actually here? Very little is here. But that's kind of getting there. And then, like I said, the PlayStation Plus stuff, the extra tier is incredible, but the premium tier has a lot more, could do with a lot more, yeah, if they want to bring Game Pass people across. And then you have Xbox sort of ostensibly doubling down on Game Pass going forward. And we know that they have so much money to spend on their first party games or to reinforce new ideas and things like that, which is what I want to see and what I've wanted to see for 8 years now.
Me too, Scott Tilford, but you know, making money and investing money are two completely different things. And just because, you know, all of this money is coming in doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be dispersed as it should. You know, they're going to want to keep as many profits as possible. You know, you look at the likes of Activision Blizzard, which they are trying to buy, you know, when they had a record year and they were still laying off like 800 staff. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's like in a utopian ideal world, $3 billion in revenue versus a couple hundred million in spend on the Game Pass games should result in that money being dispersed and hopefully going to the developers who can then create high quality games. However, how much of that money is just being pocketed, we don't know.
We don't know. Whatever I have to do to get a new Def Jam, I will go to whichever console has that on. But let us know what you think down in the comments below of Game Pass. Do you have it? Do you like the idea that, you know, they have so much money to now spend on games? Where do you sit in regards to Xbox thoughts overall? For now, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com.
I've been Josh from WhatCulture.com.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye bye.
Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.